you with it, correct amount.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com.
Roll for initiative.
Greetings, Gamer Nation and RFI Nation. We're coming back to you again for Roll for Initiative podcast, issue number 23. Yes, that's 23. A 2 and 3 put together. What does that spell? 23. And I'm your host, DM Vincent, along with DM Jason, or I'm sorry, DM Megatron Galvatron. And
I'm back to Jason. It's all right.
All right, DM Jason and DM Nick. How are we doing tonight, guys?
Oops, fine. Spooked out. Spooked out by number 23. It's the...
Yeah.
So,
something's going to happen.
Nah, I don't think it's going to happen.
Weird.
This isn't like the demon episode, so we're all right.
I don't know. I mean, the Templars, the assassinations, who knows what could come up.
Very true. We'll get more into the significance of 23 later on, but for now, we're going to talk about us. Yay, us!
Yay us?
Yay us, yes. Not anything else. Website, rfipodcast.com. Articles, Jason, we have anything new?
You know what? I actually have to go and take a look. I'm pretty sure that Todd Hughes has the latest +2 to save. Right. Let me go see in what he put up. I actually stopped trying to proofread everything myself because I realized that I'm actually only one person. So,
But you're Megatron Galvatron.
I'm several different people, but when it comes to getting anything done, unfortunately, I can't seem to fix physics.
Actually, he does. He has a new one.
While
is it
doing
primed
that?
And ready? Is that his?
Yes, it's it.
Oh, nice, right.
Primed and ready.
So, okay, well, there's a great... There it is, primed and ready with a beautiful picture of the Milky Way. And I'll have to read up on it to see exactly what we're talking about here.
Well, while you're taking a look at that, Nick, why don't you... Did you had a few comments to read off for us tonight?
Yeah, there was a few that we had off dragonsfoot.org, just I picked up on, just talk about our latest episode of 22, so the one before this, they're just, it was a one fellow, I was just reading, if I could pick it up here, sorry, where is he, his name is Meshwork, he said, best podcast out there.
Well, I agree.
And, yeah, no complaints here, yeah. And a lot of people, including Meshwork himself, were just talking about they like the, you know, we were talking about the creature feature thing. They would kind of, you know, like to keep it the way it is, maybe shorten it a little. You know, people giving some good feedback. So it's very much the stuff that we're looking for here. So
appreciate yeah, there's a lot of back feedback. And forth on that.
Yeah, appreciate any positive or negative feedback that we can get. We'll take it, and we'll see what we could do for you folks.
Well, we'll have an
I think what we'll do on the creature feature, since there were people... Some people said they were jumping ahead to find out what the creature was. Some people said it was a little long. Some people said they wanted exactly like it was. What we'll probably do, I'll put in a chapter in this, starting with this episode. So if you get to the creature feature and you want to jump ahead to the reveal... You'll be able to jump to the next chapter, and it'll be right to the part where it says what the creature is. But we'll try to keep it, you know, short enough that it doesn't lose your interest.
Right.
Yeah, we should have actual play sooner or later, eventually up as a separate download for all those people that want to listen to actual play.
Yes, the Skype game. We've had a couple of people write in about joining up with that. We're going to figure out you know, who to put on it. I just haven't got it started yet. I think we will be able to get at least one game in before Gen Con, hopefully two, and maybe get those put up as well.
Cool. Wow. Anything, Vince, on like Gen Con, anything new there? Anything to tell?
It's coming up.
Besides it being coming up.
I don't know.
Well, the big thing for everybody who's listening is that right now, what is it? What are we, 2.5 weeks away? Something like that?
And roughly, yeah.
Yeah, so if you want to have a Roll for Initiative t-shirt before Gen Con, this is pretty much your last chance to get one and actually get it in time, because they, you know, we're doing them through Spreadshirt. They make them on demand, so it takes a few days to get your shirt. So, you know, do that. And if we see you, will come over, and I'll try to keep my recorder with me so we can come over and record you to put you on the show saying hello, you know, if we see you in a Roll for Initiative t-shirt.
Definitely.
Operators are standing by.
Yeah. And if you see either one of us, then, you know, come over and say hi. We'll be all over the place, so.
Yeah, but I'll snub everybody, so I don't really care. I'm kidding.
I don't think so. No.
Yeah. I will open-handedly shake everybody's hand and kiss babies and whatever else we need to do.
Kissing hands, shaking babies, yes.
Yes.
I mean...
Well, right now everybody should be holding in their grubby little paws a Gen Con package. It should have come by now. At least mine did.
I don't know. I got a badge. I got my badge. I didn't know there was a package that came with it.
Nice whole little package with all, with all your tickets in there and information. You didn't get that, Jason? Oh, wow.
I got my badge. I didn't pre-purchase any tickets. I'm just going to pick them up when I get there. I'm going on Wednesday. I mean, the lines are short for tickets on Wednesday, so it's not a big deal.
All right.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too bad.
So we're looking forward to Gen Con. Find Jason and myself. You can't miss us. We'll be the Roll for Initiative guys with the big banner and the balloons. Oh, no, we won't have that.
I'm really easy to spot. I'm the one that people are always mistaking for Brad Pitt, so, you know.
Oh, okay. I forgot. Sorry.
Bruh.
Yeah, we'll definitely do some pickup games, Jason and I, because we want to play as much first edition as we possibly can. So
yeah.
All right. I think that's going to end everything. Go to the website, email us, rfistaff@gmail.com, and you can call us 206-279-3272, or you can click on the phone icon and it'll call you back immediately, and you can leave your message. Otherwise, we're going to head into the table manners for this week.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
Table manners. This week, we have something interesting for you. It's going to be revolved around the number 23. Now, Jason, you brought this to my attention. What is the significance of 23 for this episode?
Oh, boy. So I think anybody who's listening probably already has a pretty good grounding in 23 enigmas and all the conspiracies that go around that. But I'll just for anybody who's maybe new to being a geek, I will bring up a few things. So 23 really got exposed to the world by Robert Anton Wilson. I don't remember which book it was he first brought it up, but the Illuminatus trilogy is the one where he really has the best time with it.
That's correct.
He basically, you know, Robert Anton Wilson, if anybody knows him pretty well, he was one of the last tricksters, one of the last merry prankster types, and he loved tweaking everybody. So he basically invented a conspiracy and said, the number 23 shows up everywhere, look out for it, you know, and kind of pointed that out to people with the idea that as soon as you start looking for it, you're going to see it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it worked really well because to this day, you've got things like Psychic TV, the band Psychic TV, which puts 23 all over everything. You've got any number of industrial and goth bands that all had the 23 in their names. You know, Virus 23, Contagion 23, Delirium 23, I think was a band. I don't know, a bunch of those.
The movie 23?
Some of the things in here. William Shakespeare was born and died on the 23rd. The first landing on the moon was at the Sea of Tranquility, which was at 23 degrees east, and the second landing was at 23 degrees west. Let's see, there's 23 letters in the Justified Ancients of Mumu. There's the axis of the planet Earth is about 23 degrees. We have 23 something in our DNA, and I don't remember what. Whoa, that's actually kind of sad. Dave Gattell from Skinny Puppy died on the 23rd. There's just any number of things we could start pointing to with that. But what does it have to do with us is that if this is episode 23, that means we're going to be talking about conspiracies.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
And, you know, conspiracies are one of the best plot points you can have for an adventure. And they're one of the things that your players are going to be looking for around every corner anyway. Right. So why not give it to them?
So you're kind of like, we're not only talking like maybe conspiracies, but like secret societies, maybe cults,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of all tied in together. And yeah, in tribute, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, so.
Yeah. It's a really good thing to do when you start bringing your character. You know, we're going to be talking about building adventures today, so you know, one of the things that you can talk about when you're doing
ruin
that
a surprise.
Oh, it's a surprise. Sorry, we're not going to be talking about anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Go on, Jason.
No, nothing.
But anyways, you know, when you start encountering the various NPCs, why make it obvious who's the bad guy and who's the good guy right away? It's if you're looking at this from a fiction standpoint, it's kind of an old trope, but why not go for it? The idea of you meet somebody who seems to be the villain, and halfway through the story, it turns out that he was a good guy all along, and the guy you thought was the good guy was the villain. Works great in a game. So,
wow.
What are some of the conspiracies that you guys have brought into your games before?
I don't really
conspiracies.
I don't really use many conspiracies, but I'm going to throw it over to Nick so while I think about some things.
Secret societies.
Well, that's funny because to mention it, because I am a Freemason, and I don't know if I've said that before, but yes, I am. So,
we know. Actually here near where I live, we have the Grand Lodge number 1.
Really? That's
George,
cool.
George Washington's Lodge is up here on 23rd Street. And one of my other players in my game and I have been had it on our to-do list for some time to join that lodge. But
What street was that? 23rd Street?
Oh, I didn't even think about it, but you're right. It's on 23rd.
Dun, dun,
dun.
Oh, no. But, I don't know if I've really done anything in detail as far as like maybe secret societies or conspiracies of late. I have thought about it though in the past couple of years of doing something. In fact, I was thinking about, and I have some notes on this, about creating a secret society similar to the Freemasons.
Mm-hmm. And in the game or real life?
Yeah, in the game. Not in real life. No. No, like for my campaigns, for whatever campaign setting, I was thinking of doing something like that. And also constructing a dungeon that has to do with a lot of all of those the symbolism that has to do with Freemasonry and, tie in all those sorts of things together.
One of the first things that players seem to do whenever they get into any dungeon or castle or anything else is to look around for all of the inscriptions on the doors and on the chests and on the floors and everything else. And, you know, why not go ahead and use that to really start leading them down the story? And you can find a whole lot of great resources on how symbols are constructed, you know, if you want to look online for that kind of stuff. And like you're saying, it's a good idea if you're looking for ways to put a secret society into your campaign or to put a secret conspiracy that's, you know, behind everything. It's a good idea to just, you know, go to some source material. There's no end to the number of books that are out there that'll get you on that. I brought along a couple that I thought I would just refer to for people who aren't necessarily fans of conspiracy fiction and nonfiction already. Just good places to start. So one of the best books that you can pick up if you want to just get a quick overview of the different stuff out there is called The Big Book of Conspiracies.
And I have that one.
Yeah, from Factoid Books.
Mm-hmm.
It's a graphic novel, excellent place to start because every single one of the conspiracies that they lay out in here will lead you online, and you'll be searching around and reading an endless number of things about that. Another really good one, since we brought up Robert Anton Wilson, since that's kind of where a lot of this began, is a book that he put out near the end of his career called Everything is Under Control.
Yeah,
and it's a complete A to Z list of conspiracies and hoaxes and everything else. I mean, to any random page you want to flip to, I'll turn to page 23 and see what he's got there. Abductees Anonymous. It's anonymous group for people who have been abducted by aliens. And that's actually, you know, if you're looking for things to do in your campaign, not only can you do a conspiracy, you can use that as a crossover. So if you were going to bring in some Gamma World or some Traveler, you could have a secret race of aliens that are behind some of the things.
Yes, yeah, and definitely. If you flip to page 23 in the Player's Handbook, it's an illustration. Oh, never mind.
Oh.
but an illustration of what?
Of a fighter fighting a demon, it looks like. I don't know.
Oh, the one where he's on the ledge.
Paladin in Hell?
Yes, Paladin in Hell.
Interesting.
One other book that I really think I want to recommend to people if they're interested in this kind of stuff. It's called, well, two more actually. One's called Behold a Pale Horse, and that one came out sometime in the 70s, but a lot of, I think it did anyways, might have been later.
Is that the John Lear book?
William Cooper, actually.
Okay, William Cooper.
And,
okay.
And then finally, there's another really good book, which I don't have in front of me, so I can't remember the author. But the title of the book is Nothing in This Book is True, and It's Exactly How Things Are. So
great title.
Yeah, so those are some good ones that you can turn to if you're looking for source material. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with bringing in a little bit of Cthulhu flavor or really anything you want to at this point.
Yeah. Another good place to – I was just thinking of source material. Unless – if you're a night owl like myself – because I listen to this show once in a while. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
You mean I was just about to put a big plug for the original Art Bell, and my mind just froze up. I couldn't remember his name. But Bell and now Norrie, yeah.
Yeah, he used to host the show. He comes on like every few months to maybe fill in.
Oh, he does?
But,
cool.
Every few months.
You can get it on late night AM still, and they let you subscribe to it, but it costs money to subscribe, and I don't know. I just can't – one more thing to add on to. I really should, though, because, I mean, they deserve the support. It's a great show.
Yeah, it is a great show. I've been listening actually to that show, you know, every so often since, like, the mid-90s when I was living out there in Vegas, when Art Bell actually started to take that turn into the weird and the surreal and so on. I mean, we're like a stone's throw away from Area 51 out there. So
you took a class on this?
Yeah.
Yeah, I took a class a few years ago at Community College of Southern Nevada when I was living in Las Vegas.
So the ideal location.
It was an elective. Yeah, it was an elective class. It was supposed to be for a history credit, and it was called Conspiracies in a New World Order, and. It was a very interesting class. I mean, it talked about the Illuminati, the Bilderberger Group, the Council of Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, all that stuff, and
that's another thing you can learn there. Yeah, you can really easily just grab any of that stuff and just swap a few syllables around, and if your players are into this kind of stuff, it's kind of good because, you know, you're supposed to keep player knowledge and character knowledge separate and all that, but there's so much going on in a game that, you know, we think as DMs that we're laying out something that's really obvious to the players, but the fact is when you're sitting there as the player listening to what's going on, you're so in the dark anyways that any little bit of a clue really helps you along. So if you use things along, you know, that kind of sounds similar to stuff they might have heard of in the real world, and at least it'll give them a little bit of a clue to what's going on with it. Like, I was just reading the, I forget which comic. It was probably either Alan Moore or Grant Morrison, you know, because they'll write about that stuff. And, actually, it was Ed Brubaker. And in it, he had, you know, they went to this place that was called the Imperial Grove, which was obviously supposed to be Bohemian Grove, you know.
Oh, and, right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. I mean, you could just change one word and just go ahead and, you know, play off of that. So,
you know, yeah, that's good you mentioned that, the Bohemian Grove thing. That would make a very interesting
Druids.
Kind of a cult, yeah.
I mean, they're basically Druids anyway.
If anybody doesn't know out there what the Bohemian Grove thing is, it's supposed, I guess it's like Northern California. There's this place. I think it's a state park or it's a private park. I don't remember which it was. But they're like prominent figures in American media and industry, and just like a whole weird mix of people go to this place for what, like a week? I think it is.
It's like some sort of occult version of the TED conference.
Yeah, it's like a weird retreat.
Yeah, and you know, supposedly there was some reporter who said he had film of, you know, George H.W. Bush doing a pagan ritual on stage or something. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, it's. But the point is, it's fun to do, and so look up some of that source material, put it in your campaign. It'll really give you not just a fun twist for the players, but it also makes it a lot easier as a DM to keep the storyline going, because anytime you wonder if you can have a little bit of somebody pulling the strings behind the scenes, it makes it easier for you to get where you want to go.
Right. The only thing I'm thinking about, this whole idea of like using conspiracies and or cults or secret societies, is I guess there's two different paths you could take with this. One is you can go ahead and greatly detail the whole conspiracy and who's connected to where and why, what are their motivations. I mean, you could go the whole nine yards, or you could kind of play it loose, I suppose, because it could get really, really complex very quickly from what I would think, you know?
I think you got to. I mean, I think you really got to play it loose because, I mean, in my experience, every time I've laid out a really carefully constructed scenario for my players, they go exactly the opposite direction.
Yeah, it all goes to hell, right?
Yes. You know, that's where you've spent 2 weeks building this town, and they decide to camp outside and go straight right. for them.
I would think it'd be hard to lay out a conspiracy.
I guess what you could do is maybe have just a real basic outline of maybe like a certain secret society. You know, where are their goals and where are their current things that they're doing and mm-hmm. the members. And just kind of leave it at that. And then your players, if they interact with this secret society or whatever it may be, then it starts to get into the complexity of things. I guess that's a way I guess you could wing it, you know.
Well, plus, you know, as it's going along, things are going to come up, and you make your notes as it's happening. So if the players are absolutely convinced, you know, that something has a lot of importance, and it looks like they're about to spend a whole lot of time focusing on it, rather than trying to push them back in the right direction, just go ahead and move some of your things over right. there, move some of your machinations and plots, and just keep notes about what it, you know, where they ended up taking it, and they're going to be creating the story as much as you are as you get to that point.
Okay, another real good. The next bulletin point we'll move on to will be: can PCs join secret societies, and how would you keep? How would you tell a player who's part of the society to keep the information from other players? What advice would you give them? It's going to be a hard one. Because you know how people can't like you got to tell people. You got to tell people so.
Well, I mean, that's the old character knowledge kind of thing. And, you know, you pass in the notes and doing all those kind of things. But I think I'd absolutely have the player characters joining secret societies if they want to, even to the point where it might involve them occasionally having a solo adventure that they need to go on. Because, I mean, especially, you know, we talk a lot about the way, you know, the playing of the game and everything inside of the game on this show. But one of the things we haven't talked about as much is the fact that not all of us, a lot of people who are playing first edition are younger, but a lot of us are playing it because it's the game we started with. And if you're old enough to have started with this in the early 80s, then you're also probably old enough now that sometimes people just don't show up for games. You know, a lot of things, commitments come up. So a good way to handle that is to have those side solo adventures, and a player who's in a secret society can really be a good thing for that.
You know, when you were talking about like how you were talking about, Vince, about how maybe a player character's getting into a secret society, a scenario that just popped into my head. Yeah. From another game, but it's a game I enjoy. It's for Call of Cthulhu.
I pretty much figured it would be Cthulhu.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's either AD&D or Call of Cthulhu are my two favorites. Yeah. It's the campaign for Shadows of Yogg-Sothoth. And the first part of that campaign is called the Hermetic Order of Silver Twilight, of the Silver Twilight, if I recall that correctly. And what the investigators have to do to find out about this Hermetic Order, they have to, at least one or a few of them have to somehow join this esoteric society and see what they're all about, see what they're up to. Mm-hmm. So, but you could see something like that, that could be used in an AD&D game. Maybe there's a type of esoteric order in a kingdom, and they've been growing in prominence, and your party has been sent by maybe the king to find out what this secret of order is all about. Maybe a couple of you have to join this secret society, but you're going to be at risk being found out. So there's an interesting twist right there. So,
and a good way to do it is whatever your main law in the land is, whatever the prominent deity is and the prominent social order, just take a look at what you've already set up and think about what if it was all a lie? What if the prominent social order was the opposite of what it really claims to be? And you've pretty much instantly been able to, you can create then what your secret society is going to be about. The one you just named, you called it the something of the Silver Star.
Yeah, Hermetic Order of the Silver Twilight.
Silver Twilight. So, I mean, there's a good example of taking something real world and just changing it a little bit because, you know, Aleister Crowley's group was Argentum Astrum, the Silver Star. Right. And it was, he was a Thelemite instead of a Hermetic. But, I mean, it's all the same kind of stuff. And basically what all those early 20th century conspiracies, a lot of them were just about taking the established order and saying, what if that was actually just the opposite of what it said it was?
You know, I just thought of another good source for an idea is like of a cult or a secret society that the characters would have to infiltrate is the first Conan the Barbarian movie, the snake cult of Set.
Yeah.
Perfect.
You know, I mean, it's right there. It's in a fantasy setting. You know, remember the king is like talking about the snake cult, how it's going all over Koth, Stygia, all over the place. He wants to get his daughter back and find out what this cult is about. So there's an idea right in a fantasy campaign or a fantasy setting, I should say. So
yeah,
that's a lot of good ideas out there.
A lot of good ideas come from World of Darkness too. If you go for that RPG, the Hunter, the Vigil line has compacts and conspiracies. The whole game pretty much is based upon conspiracies. So you could just flip through that for some nice source material. Plus, those books are really nice looking, too. So,
yeah, wasn't there, like, what was it, Conspiracy X? That's another one.
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with it, but I know that one's out there, too.
X-Files is big on conspiracy stuff.
Yeah.
Steve Jackson makes a whole bunch of conspiracies. There was...
Warehouse 23 right off their website.
That's probably I can think of that for that. Any more ideas for source material?
Could just go on forever, but that's the thing is there's definitely read your Bajant, Lincoln, and Lay, all the people that wrote the stuff about like the Temple and the Lodge and the Holy Blood, Holy Grail, all that stuff Dan Brown ripped off without actually bothering to get it right. Lynn Picknett and Clive Prince are another other ones that are really good to read. Who wrote The Sign and the Seal? I can't remember his name right now, but he, I can just see it on the other side of the room, but my eyes aren't good enough. Graham or something like that. But anyways,
glasses.
Yeah, there's no end to them. There's some good podcasts you can listen to. The Disinformation podcast is a good place to start. The thing is, this is the internet. Once you look at one thing, you might as well just give up your week because you're going to be following links for a week straight, looking at this stuff. So,
another guy I just thought of besides Coast to Coast AM, Alex Jones.
I cannot recommend him. I mean, I know his.
He's way out there. Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I get what you're saying, but he gets a little bit too. He's a little too ridiculous for me. That's that whole Prison Planet stuff. And
I know. I'll listen to him because I get a good laugh.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to go too far into that because
They say some say that Scientology is a conspiracy too. So,
we don't want to go there. Yeah. Really, we don't.
All right, we'll take this segment and throw it back at you, and we'll hear what you want to say out there for your conspiracies in game. I'd like to hear some ideas that we can share with others on the forums. Just let us know what you do, rfistaff@gmail.com.
Adventure Structure. Set.
All right, so now we're heading into a new segment tonight. And this new segment's going to lead up. It's going to be a little bit each week. It's going to be called, well, Jason dropped the bomb already on this one, Adventure Building. Jason.
Well, Adventure, sorry, I hate to have done it, but we made the bumpers for it, and I called it Adventure Construction Set.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's called Adventure Construction Set. I apologize.
Well, it was just because I couldn't get the original Adventure Construction Set out of my head. The old Apple II Commodore 64 game let you build your own adventures. Greatest thing ever.
All right. So the Adventure Construction segment for now. Set segment, whatever.
Thingy.
We'll get it right.
Yeah, so we got the thingy.
Yeah, the thingy right. So basically what we're going to do is... this week, and probably every other week, when we need to put some segments into the show, we will build a small adventure, and we'll give it free for everyone up on the website when we're done with it. And we'll all collaborate on it, and we'll get thoughts and ideas from everybody around the listening world, RFI Nation. This adventure will be for level 1 to 3 characters. We'd say about 4 to 6 is generally the standard, right, guys?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's about normal.
And we're going to be taking a look at, and some people may not remember this, but TSR's Dungeon Master's Design Kit, Book 1 Adventure Design. You guys remember that book?
I actually never had this before.
Really?
When you brought it up this week, I had to go looking for it, and I found a PDF of it, but as soon as I get to Gen Con, I'll be looking for a real copy to buy.
Mine's wrecked. I need to go buy it. Hopefully they'll have one.
Was that a first edition book?
Yeah, it was.
1988, so it was right at the tail end of first edition.
Yeah, it was first edition. Anyway, it's 97 pages, and it has three different sections in the book. It has a adventure design section, book one. Then it goes into like a fast scenario adventure building where you just roll dice, and it gives you scenarios and situations for what you can do in your adventure, and then the third one is a little bit more mapping things out, but we're going to stick with book one.
Yeah, it's an excellent book, and this is a good counterpart to the what was it called, the dungeon deck or something that you brought on the other day?
Yeah, the dungeon deck.
Oh, in case anybody is wondering if they want to go buy it or download it, however they want to do it, I think it's available at RPG Now, but it's TSR 9234. Just in case for those people out there who are questioning it. So this week we're going to do Featured Villain, or Building Your Villain. So we're actually going to deconstruct and build ourselves a big bad guy for the final fight. First off, what type of bad guy do we want, guys? Do we want, like, a fighter? Do we want a magic user? Do we want a cleric that's a mastermind? What do we want?
Let's go with a druid.
All right, so we're going to have ourselves a druid.
A druid?
Yeah, we never get good neutral villains. You know, good... And I was thinking about what Sieg said last week and about alignment and how, you know, we really need to keep in mind that good and evil are actually cosmic forces. They're not just behaviors. Well, so is neutral, and neutral is this whole balance, but you know, keeping the balance between the two. So let's have a villain here who feels that the balance of good has gotten a bit too strong in the world, and so he's going to introduce a bit of evil just to keep things on an even keel, so the yin and the yang don't get out of whack, so to speak.
All right, so all in one breath, Jason described our villain and his motivation.
Oops.
No, that's good. That's good.
No, that's good. I wouldn't even think of using a druid as a villain. I'm like, wow, I'm kind of blown away by that.
Well, I've never gone up against a druid as a villain, so let's keep it fresh.
All right.
And you know what? That just really opens up a whole slew of possibilities as far as, like, what his minions are. So, and you're not going to be running in your typical orcs and kobolds, you know?
True.
No, definitely not.
That means I have to start grabbing the fiend folio for the really good neutral monsters.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. Anyway, and what level do we think? Maybe around 5?
Well, 6? I think it should be really, if you're talking about first to third level campaign, we want them to go up against, well, let me back up for just a second. Kind of my philosophy on the big bad boss at the end.
Yeah.
I don't feel like the ultimate villain should necessarily be defeatable on his own.
Oh, I think don't either. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. I think it should be something where if the party went up, you know, head to head, one on one against this druid, they're gonna be TPK.
Level
that
10.
Somehow the total party kill. So that somehow the goal of this should be more about thwarting his plans than necessarily about being able to. Because the other good thing about a villain, about a really well done villain, is the villain that escapes and fights again another day and keeps cropping up at different places in the campaign.
Right. You want to have a villain that to where, you know, he's the mastermind. He's not going to be an idiot and goes right out there and fights the whole party at the get-go. He's gonna let his minions and whatever else do the dirty work for him. He's gonna work from behind the scenes if he can.
So we want a street smart Cobra Commander.
Yeah, that's what we want.
Hissing.
What level? I think he should just be unbelievably high level, the kind of thing you would never imagine reaching, like 9th.
Whoa! Yeah, that's true, that's high. I'm going to put him as 10th.
Okay.
That nice round number, 10th, unbelievable.
So he would be an initiate of the 8th circle.
Yes.
So, okay.
And if we flip open our DM's guide to appendix in the back,
yes,
we could roll his statistics, and we could roll maybe some of the stuff that he has.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for Appendix P, I believe
it
is.
Yes, it was.
That's creating a party? P for party? All right, yeah, let's hook him up. Let's get him going.
Let's hook this brother up.
Okay. So
we're talking, what, 8th? No, actually, 10th level.
10th
right,
level.
Now, I personally wouldn't necessarily... Yeah, 10th level. I wouldn't roll up stats when it comes to the big bad boss. I would just give him the stats that you think are appropriate. Because you don't want somebody who's reached 10th level not having the appropriate, you know, the stats that you think are the best.
That makes sense.
Well, that makes sense too, but I also like to keep it fair. So okay. I would probably just roll it just to see what I got first. And then,
fairness? Bah! I want
to
kill him.
Yeah. I would roll it to see what I got first as a basis, and then I would improve it from there.
Okay. Should we roll
him
now?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, you like rolling. Go ahead.
Okay, great. So I'm going to do the... I'm going to take the normal 46, but I'm going to add in one more as, you know, because we really want him to be our bad guy. So for his... okay, so hold on a second here. For his first one... Actually, that's not bad. Just with a regular 46, I just got a 16.
Wow.
So, yeah. So actually, that's the other question. Do we want to roll in order? Or... do we want to just kind of go, you know, where does the 16 go?
All right, well, we'll just roll them out, and we'll see what we get. And then
all right,
we'll
so let's give him a 16 strength. What the heck?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I've got a 12, and that's actually not bad. So
that's
not bad for
intelligence.
Yeah, I think we can just keep on going in order, but here comes the big one. And honestly, this isn't a 17 or an 18, I don't know if I want him going up against him. So here comes his wisdom. And actually, it's already a 16 without rolling my extra backup die. 17.
Good.
Good enough for the big
boss? Good
enough
for me. Heck yeah.
You think?
I think so.
Okay. So 17 wisdom. And here comes the dexterity. 17 dexterity. This is 4d6. I'm serious. 4d6 and discarding one.
Would you write down for his intelligence? I'm sorry, writing the stats down.
16. Oh, no, sorry. What was intelligence?
I think 12.
12.
12, yeah. All right.
So that's slightly above average for intelligence. That's good.
Yeah.
Here comes the constitution. I don't care what happens with this. And so, naturally, it's a 14.
Okay, not bad.
I'm using precision dice. I'm pretty surprised at how good they're treating me.
Yeah.
And... what did I leave out? Charisma.
Charisma.
And charisma is 13.
Okay.
That's some high stats.
Actually, yeah, that is very good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'm happy with him. Okay.
Well, but he needs... Oh, hold on a second. For a droid, he has to have a minimum 15 charisma.
So we're going to push that up to 15 right now.
Yeah, so we'll just bump him to 15.
Okay, so take it off his constitution.
No, we're just going to bump it up at this point.
Yeah, we'll just bump it up.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And I think as a druid, he should have a 20 wisdom.
Think so?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't go for that. I mean, I'm... How did he get 20? I mean, that's two wishes at least, right?
Well, you'd figure he's a 10th level. He has to have done things between 1 and 10 that's improved himself somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think putting a 20 wisdom would be too far-fetched.
I can hear the emails coming in already. But
let them fly.
No, go for it. Gets back to philosophy again. I get really uncomfortable with ability scores over 18. There has to be a really good reason for it to have happened. And partially because it's a little bit of a reaction on my part to the kind of stat inflation and XP inflation and everything inflation that happened in later years. But, you know, if we can come up with a good backstory to explain how he would have gotten to such a honestly demigod-like wisdom, then let's go for it.
Maybe that's why he's able to do what he's doing, trying to put
let's do it.
A little evil into balance. Yeah, why the heck not?
Let's do it. Let the peanut gallery complain. Go for it.
Yeah, right. Now, as far as figuring out his hit points, now how would you guys play that out? Would you just assign him hit points, or when the time comes, just give him a number and let go, and then have him, like you said, run away and come back?
What I do with monsters, I always give my monsters max hit points.
Right.
So I would give him max.
Wow, I'm not playing in your campaign.
Yeah, really.
Well, that's because I'm evil. Oh, no.
Well, one of the other things is when I do the monsters, the reason I roll them rather than giving them max hit points is because I want them to each have a different amount so the players can't be sure how well they've how close to death each one is.
Mm-hmm.
But for this guy, let's give it sort of an average thing. Let's call it maybe 63 hit points.
Okay.
It's a good, healthy amount, and, you know.
Does he get higher, a con bonus, I think?
Well, I was just given a number.
It doesn't really matter, because...
63 is good.
Players are never actually going to really kill this big bad guy. He's going to get away. We've already determined that, so...
Yeah, unless they manage to come up with some unbelievable trap that... You know, kills him right away, and even then, I'd probably find some way to bring him back from the dead just so they could have a nemesis.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Nemesis.
All nemesis. Right.
So now we're flipping over to the DM guide there for creating characters at later levels. Nick, you said you had that open?
Oh, yes, I did. I did have it. Darn it, I just shut it by accident. That was Appendix P. Okay, yeah. So
we're going to want to roll for give him a couple little items here and so he can play with the party.
So for Druid, he would have at 10th level, he'd have an 80% chance of having magical leather armor.
Jason, I'd say he's got it then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would say just, at that level, hook him up with some plus three because he's not going to have a lot
plus
of other...
Three.
Yeah, he's not going to let... Plus two.
Plus two leather armor.
He might have some other kind of...
And let's see, 50% chance of getting a ring of protection.
Okay. And I should have actually said whether that was going to be above or below. You tell me, above or below 50?
Above.
Nope.
Okay. What's next, Nick?
I guess we could determine if he has any scrolls.
Scrolls I wouldn't bother with him because, you know, when it
really,
this is, we just rolled up, you know, some higher level players for PCs. I told them, don't worry about the scrolls because the whole point of finding the scrolls is so you can write them in your book later. So, you know, why would he just be carrying them around? So let's skip the scrolls.
Yeah, let's just go on to the weapons then.
Yeah.
He'll have an 80% chance of having a dagger.
Yes, he's definitely got that.
It would be at least a plus one. I would say a dagger plus two.
Such a last minute kind of, or last resort kind of thing, but give it to him.
A sword, it would obviously be a scimitar.
Would it? Okay.
Yeah, because it says a 7% chance for sword under asterisk, scimitar in the case of druids. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I never really thought about that.
So, because, that's a weapon that the druids can use. Just my thought on this. I would give him a scimitar of speed. That's just me.
Do it.
Alright, so give him a scimitar of speed.
Yeah, that's how I would do it. I mean, because, know, he's our arch he's the arch nemesis. Mm-hmm. And let's see, 80% chance of having a spear.
I would say he
sure.
has it, yeah.
I think it should be some sort of spear of destiny kind of spear. Maybe this could have something to do with the driving. It would be one that is so it could be really an artifact, something that he doesn't take into battle. It's too precious. It's key to his actual power over the entire grove and the area.
You know, that might be something for the next one. We can construct the MacGuffin here. Maybe this spear is the MacGuffin, you know?
It could be an idea.
It could be. Okay. So okay, we'll kind of... we'll earmark that to the side, that spear possible MacGuffin here. So, yeah, that'd be cool. I'm liking this. I'm liking this guy.
Spear of Destiny type thing?
Yeah.
Yes. Something that he's using, this spear maybe, is it's channeling some sort of power somehow.
Right. Yeah, I think for this one, we're going to want to go ahead and, you know, create something create a unique artifact for this, and that could be a good future episode when we talk about artifact creation.
Right. Okay. And that's something better than just like everybody's like, it's always a magical sword like Excalibur or someone that they're looking for. This time, it's a spear, something different. So
yeah, and it'll have a storyline and everything else behind it, so that's good. Mm-hmm.
I also want to, I think we should also give him something like a cloak of invisibility so he can sneak around and watch the party without them knowing.
You know what? Yeah, I think you really should have a ring of animal friendship.
I was exactly going to go there. Because aside from the fact that he's a druid and that's awesome, and we just talked about the ring of animal friendship, the other thing is we're starting to get his personality coming out of this now, because it should be all about controlling from behind the scenes, right?
Right.
So the kind of magic items he has, like Vince just said, should be about things that allow him to slip in and out of places undetected.
Right.
Things that allow him to control people and the animals around him. So maybe one of the rings, he could have a ring of human influence.
Ooh. And a ring of animal friendship? Nasty combo.
I mean, this is how he manages to wield power over the entire area.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. This is actually, I wish I could remember the name of the comic that I just spent like a whole weekend reading, but it's the Ed Brubaker comic where he has this character Tau, who's the shadowy figure that's controlling everyone, and one of his powers is the ability to control people's minds, and it's kind of influencing how I'm thinking about this druid now.
All right, so we're getting a picture of our big bad guy here. We got a druid. His motivation is too much good in the world, and he wants to promote more evil, pretty much. Or wants to even it out, so to speak.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
He views the whole world as sort of... he views himself as above all of the petty day-to-day of the world. And he's not really concerned with, you know, how people are on a good or evil basis. He just wants to make sure that the balance stays the same. And he can so the balance is getting too far in the good, and he can see that maybe it's actually causing some sort of larger, you know, the greater good is being damaged by the fact that the cosmic force of good is exerting too much power here.
Okay, so
like all good villains, he's like looking at the big picture, the grand scope,
right?
And he doesn't care about the petty little people as long as it's into his grand master design.
Right, he's using his spear of destiny or whatever we're calling it in the future. He's communicating with it, and he's figuring these things out. He has his cloak of invisibility to get in and out of sticky situations. He has his ring of animal friendship to control all his little foresty friends. He has the ring of human influence, so he can influence all the people around him. He's got his leather armor +2, his dagger +2, and his scimitar. I keep wanting to say it like you want to say it. Scimitar +off speed.
Yeah, scimitar speed, yep.
And we have 16 strength, dexterity 17, con 14, intelligence 12, wisdom 20, and charisma 15.
Yep.
63 hit points. So we have a brief picture of what our big bad guy looks like.
I like him. He's pretty cool. I could just already picturing how much mayhem this guy could cause with a group of characters. Because they're not going to expect... you know, maybe, you know, being attacked by woodland creatures, maybe, you know.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So next week when we come back for this segment, or whenever we do this segment again, which will be another week, probably next week or the following, we will get into the whole Spear of Destiny. We'll do a little background on that, what its magical properties are, and how the druid uses it. So,
yeah.
Because that'll be pretty much part of maybe the hook plot of this adventure. Who knows?
The Dragon's Hoard.
Dragon's Hoard. What do we have this week, Jason?
So this week we have the Sword of Sharpness, which, related to, but not the same as, a Vorpal Sword, which I think we talked about the Vorpal Sword in an earlier episode.
Yes,
issue. In an earlier issue.
You know what was funny, Jason? When you told me that we did the Vorpal Sword and you read me that that poetic line that you had.
Oh, from Jabberwocky.
Yeah, I happened to go with my wife to go see Alice in Wonderland, and they had that whole entire line and with the Vorpal Sword inside the movie too.
Oh, that's awesome!
I was like, "What? Did Jason hear this from Alice in Wonderland?"
No, just a Lewis Carroll fan when I was a little kid. Yep. So, the Sword of Sharpness, it acts for the purposes of what creatures, monsters, people can be hit, or gods, whatever, can be hit by it. It acts as a +3 sword.
Yes.
However, it's actually just a +1 when it comes to actually determining the two hits or determining the damage. The thing that makes the Sword of Sharpness so particularly nasty, though, he says, stalling as he flips, but what makes it so particularly nasty is that on a high enough roll, I won't even bother looking up the numbers, we can figure. We can,
yeah, I got it right here.
It was 17
on a high
to 20?
Enough roll, it will actually sever a limb. Or will it sever a head, since you're looking at the actual description there, Nick?
It does not say.
Okay, well, it only says. No.
Yeah, it only says depending on, you know, if you're normal armored and then the die roll, what gets severed. It doesn't say what gets severed.
This
okay,
is where,
well, I'm going to say no to the head, because that's what a Vorpal sword is for.
This is going to be what the DM fiat is, what the DM decides. I mean, you can make up your own chart for this.
Yes, and that's
I
the
have
fun
a chart.
Part.
And you're, yeah, I knew you would. I was thinking Jason had a chart, because he's the chart master here. So.
No. Let's. I. Oh, by the way, Nick, did you put up the your list from last time? Did you put it up on the site yet?
Oh, for the racial
No, it was for the animal friendship.
Oh, no, not yet, but I will this.
Okay,
by
the time people hear this podcast, there will be, from last week's issue, there will be a list of animals that could be affected by animal friendship in Nick's estimation. But for this week, we will put up the chart that you have created so that people can determine for themselves which limb gets hacked off by the Sword of Sharpness. Go for it.
Now, for me, I would actually include the head, but
okay, that's fair.
All right.
Yeah, but just to be fair, I mean, I made it just a straight D6 roll.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, 1 left arm, 2 right arm, 3 left leg, 4 right leg, 5 head, or 6 cut in twain, cut in two.
Yeah.
Because that's how I am.
That's how Nick rolls.
And as far as left arm, right arm, left leg, and right leg, I made it an additional D6 roll to see where on the arm it actually, or leg, it gets severed. Like, 1 to 2, is it severed at the wrist? 3 to 4, severed at the elbow. 5 to 6, severed at the shoulder. And for the leg, a 1 to 2 is severed at the ankle. 3 to 4, severed at the knee. 5 to 6, severed at the hip.
So is the head like you get a haircut or like a tomahawk chop or?
Oh, you know, severed like at the neck.
Oh,
know.
Yeah.
Cut in twain, yeah, you know, the whole, you're cut in two. So
I got better.
So what are you going to do with monsters that don't have the normal number of limbs?
Yeah, I knew someone was going to ask that.
I haven't gotten that far yet.
Actually, okay, something like a spider, you know, maybe a
D10.
D8. Or, you know, 1 through 8 would be a particular leg. 9 and 10 would be the head, you know?
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
Something like that. I mean, I guess you could, But for anything else, I don't know. I mean, six-headed Hydra, you know, roll, I don't know, D6 for whatever head, but, you know, it's four-legged, maybe a D10. I don't know.
What if it was...
Well, the other came thing up, we got to put up, then, is, you know, once you get that chart put together, we have to figure out if any dragon article, or if there's in one of, maybe in one of the books that I'm not thinking about, talks about what are the effects of a creature that's fighting after having lost a limb.
I'm not aware of one in Dragon Magazine.
I'm not either. Maybe someone will write in right away and tell us where it is, or maybe we'll find it on our own first, or maybe we'll have to make it up.
We could, if you want to go out on a limb here. I actually, the older version of Hackmaster, the fourth edition Hackmaster, has a whole detailed thing about, you know, what it does for critical hits. I guess you could use that too. I mean, there's like rules there for profuse bleeding and what have you. Mm-hmm. If some people are familiar with the old Rollmaster system, I think that's kind of borrowed from it. So I guess if you wanted to go that far, I guess you could.
Okay. So, yeah, because I mean, so one of the things, Vince, you were asking about, would we allow that in a campaign? Is it too powerful, right?
Yeah. Some people think it's too powerful because you can sever limbs and heads in Nick's game and Twain and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, I don't want to get my Twain cut off.
Yeah.
So,
Twain's hey, this is a family friendly podcast here.
He meant his finger.
Twain, it's like your toenail.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think you have a really good point that this should be considered a very high level weapon. It's not the kind of thing that you would hand out like you would hand a normal +1 or +3 sword.
Right, I agree. I mean, this is something that would not be given lightly.
In my campaign, it would probably be okay. For one very specific reason why I would feel comfortable with it is that we use critical hits and misses. So since we play fumbles, if there's a fighter who's willing to go into the battle with a sword of sharpness knowing that on a critical fumble I'm going to make him roll again to see if it was enough of a fumble to actually cut off his own arm or leg, then he's welcome to run into battle with that over and over again.
I like that.
Yeah, I know quite a few people in first edition who don't play with the critical failure, critical hit method, so everybody should.
I like using critical hits and critical fumbles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those things that I don't believe, if I'm remembering right, that Gary Gygax actually liked that very much. I think he actually wrote things speaking against it. And there's been a number of different types of critical hit systems put out in Dragon Magazine and elsewhere. It's just so much fun. No matter how much it is or isn't by the book, it's just so much fun.
I believe old Gary does say in the book is 20 is an automatic success no matter what.
But not going to the point of doing things like, you know, double damage.
No, he just, I believe all he really said, and I'm sure someone will correct me on this, but if it's wrong, that just always success, and a one is always a natural failure, so.
Yeah, and I think that probably it might have actually been in the DMG also, but I seem to remember Gygax writing something along the lines of, if you figure out the probability of rolling a 20, it's just too easy to roll that he wouldn't want to give things like double damage because it throws off the whole system that he'd set up. So there's actually a really complex chart that somebody did in an early Dragon Magazine about how to do critical hits that made it a little bit more realistic. But like I said, it's just so much fun. And if I thought it was starting to throw the game off, then, you know, that'd be another thing. But with the Sword of Sharpness, that's a really good reason to be rolling critical hits or rolling fumbles, because then it becomes a little bit more of a risk.
Yeah. I remember
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just remember a long, long time ago is when I first started getting into AD&D back in the early 80s. And I'm trying to remember where I got it from. I wish I still had it. It was it was made by a local game group, and I think they sold it at a local con. I don't think it was OmaCon. It might have been ContraTemps, if you remember that one. There was another one called ContraTemps that they used to have in Omaha back in the 80s. But it was like a book of all these different charts, and a good chunk of this, like, little 20-page pamphlet I think you got for a buck or two, was critical hit and the critical fumble charts.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we're talking, like, back in 83, 84, people were doing this. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe this item, the Sword of Sharpness, was the impetus of this. It kind of started that idea. It's like, you know, we don't have a chart for this. Oh, let's make one. So let's. Yeah.
Actually,
so I'm just kind of wondering where some of that kind of generate kind of started from.
If you want to hear some history, the great Joe DM, how he did his 20s. I'm sure you're interested in that, Jason.
Yeah, yeah.
He, when you rolled a 20, he would tell you to roll the 20 again. If you had gotten a 1, you would do half the damage you would normally do. If you got in between 2 to 10, you would do damage and a half. If you got from 10 to 19, you do double damage. If you hit a 20 again, it'd be 2.5, and he'd have you roll again. If you got the same thing all over again, but if you got another 20, it would be instant kill on whatever creature.
Wow.
That was pretty
cool. That's cool.
Yeah, that was, and it was vice versa as far as rolling a 1, then you roll a 1 again, things like that.
Right. And it's stuff like that.
That sounds kind of close to the more complex system that I'm going to have to go looking for it. We'll have to do a whole segment on critical hits, because there's a lot of fun stuff with that.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I agree.
But with the Sword of Sharpness, if we just go back to, you know, what's the possibility, you know, how deadly is this thing? So if you're going up against, let's just stick with normal, you know, opponents, giants. So we got three different types that it can hit. That you roll differently to determine whether it does its thing. The most difficult one is a solid metal or stone opponent, where you have to roll a natural 20. Mm-hmm. Because it's kind of funny, because I don't know why they wrote it this way. It says modified score to sever, and that's plus 1. So and it says consider only the sword's bonus of plus 1. So they might as well have just said natural roll.
Yeah,
but because
it says 21 in the book.
It says 21, but they mean 20, because they say consider the sword's plus 1, but don't consider any other bonuses. Don't consider your attribute bonuses. Don't consider any other magical bonuses, so whatever. But anyways, the point is, you've got a 5% chance every time you swing this thing at a stone golem of lopping off its leg.
Or an iron golem, 5%. Too.
Yeah, exactly. And when you get down to normal opponents, you know, just man-sized opponents, you only need an 18. So now you've
18
got
to 20.
now you've got a 15% chance on every single attack of lopping off an arm.
Hmm.
That's
or
pretty,
leg,
that's pretty,
or
twain, or whatever. You know, so it's pretty vicious.
Yeah,
and that's
want to talk about cutting off that twain, don't you?
You know, slicing in twain. Even if you don't use fumbles normally, if you're going to introduce this sword into your game, I would highly recommend including a fumble. And it doesn't have to be a 5% chance. You doesn't have to say on a 1 you hit yourself and it does the Sword of Sharpness cutting off a limb thing. But on a 1, I would say you fumbled. Now let's put a percentile chance of it actually hitting you in such a manner, and I would just go ahead and make it a 20% chance or so, because you've got a 5% chance before, a 20% chance afterwards. That's not incredibly high, but it means that at some point your luck is going to run out, and it's going to happen.
This poor guy's going to fumble and lops off his own arm.
His own twin.
on the very first time he uses it, probably.
All right, well, let's get some ideas from people out there, and let's move on to our creature feature.
Creature theater.
Nick, you're running creature this week.
Yes, I am. And for this week's creature feature, we're using the characters that Vince and Jason used last time when I ran it.
Oh, boy.
Which was Cedric and...
The Entertainer.
Cedric the Entertainer. It was Grimthar. Cedric and Grimthar. Mm. So yes. We're kind of having a continuing storyline in a way.
So is there?
Is it just me, or is there? Have you guys had every single campaign at some point or another? There's either a Cedric or an Alaric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just checking. Yeah. Okay.
The irony of it all is that Cedric, it was randomly came up, and I generated those characters. So that's just weird. I know.
All right. So what's my motivation?
To live.
Okay. Good. Start us off, Nick.
Kill monsters, take their stuff. Is that good enough? How about that? Okay.
Let's see. I'm going to go from neutral good to neutral evil, so I chop Jason in half. I cut his twain off.
Okay,
no.
Second. Oh, hey.
All right, go on.
All right. Well, if everybody remembers last time, we had Cedric and Grimthar. They were in an old temple, and they ran up against a couple of sons of Caius, and they survived that encounter. It was a dark and stormy night. to use that one.
Is there a crypt?
But you're able to weather the rest of the evening in the temple. No other encounters happened to you. You know, posted watches, yada yada yada, all that good stuff. And it's the next day. So you two head out, try to find the rest of the adventuring party. It's cleared up a bit, and still kind of damp from the previous evening's rain. But feel relatively rested, and you're ready to head out in hopes of finding the rest of the party.
I feel rested.
Well, at least your character does.
Oh,
on we go in search of them, then. Yes.
Yes. As you're tramping through the wilderness, you notice the... as you're going through this rocky hillsides and what have you, it's definitely looking a little more broken up. There you go. Got your two coconuts. Digging them together.
You got it. That's right. Excellent. I got my coconuts.
Message.
And no holy grenade. definitely the landscape's looking a little more desolate, a little bit more decrepit. Trees are starting to look a little more twisted and gnarled.
Mm-hmm.
So, and almost the landscape has a kind of a almost a grayish look to it, like the colors of the trees and the grass and what have you. It's kind of washed out. So. Very, and you have kind of an ominous feeling as you're going this area.
Grimthar is not only your name, which is giving me an ominous feeling today.
But as you're going through this very small, I guess you would call it a path or a pass through these hills, these rocky hills and what have you, here up ahead, you hear someone saying, "Help! Help me! Please, someone help!"
Run towards the voice.
First, I need both of you, whichever is higher, either your intelligence or wisdom, and make a d20 roll for me. And
all right,
let me
both
know if
us?
It's below. Yeah, whatever is higher, your intelligence or wisdom.
Okay.
And which, if you roll below that stat.
Stat? Yeah. That's 5. I've got a 17 wisdom. I rolled a 5.
Okay.
I got an 11 and I rolled a 3.
Okay, great. Now both of you hear this calling, like, "Help, please help me." And it sounds like the voice of a female, of a woman. But when you hear it, it sounds like someone's impersonating the voice. It's not quite like a human being.
Does it seem to be coming from above or on the ground?
It seems to be coming from up ahead of you, from the ground. So it's
from
not coming
ground.
Like up like in trees or above you in the hills.
Okay.
Is it muffled?
So,
it's above, like above you in the path going around the bend.
Is it muffled?
How,
Is it muffled?
Yes.
Does not it sound like it? No. And then you hear it again. It's like, someone please help me, help me.
Now, Grimthar, you're human?
Yes.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, DM, do I hear the voice sound like... I'm half-elf. Do I hear the voice as if it's coming in common or in some sort of elfin language?
It's definitely in the common tongue.
Okay, so I don't hear it in any different language or anything.
Nope.
Is it good common or common?
Okay. And it's too far for us to see, though, right?
Yeah, it's just right around the bend here when you're going through this pathway between the hills and these rocky hills.
Maybe the thing to do is to climb up the hill to get a better view first.
Okay, good idea.
Okay, are both of you going to do that, or one of you?
Well, let's do it.
Is there enough room for both of us to do it?
Plenty, yeah. There's plenty of handholds and what have you. You will not have any problem climbing up this rocky hill, not at all.
Okay.
So as you get to the top, and you kind of peer over to the side, what you see a little bit beyond that bend in the pathway, maybe in the path, maybe about 50, 60 feet beyond that bend, you see a very bizarre creature. It's like an amalgam of maybe like a deer, a dog, and a wolf. It kind of has a blackish mane, or not mane, but a blackish coat, maybe a white underside to it. It's kind of has.
How far away is it?
I will say 70 feet.
Okay, I cast sleep.
You cast sleep on it.
Nice. Okay. Good job.
Since that is a 90-foot range.
All right. And I have to look up the darn saving throw. Darn it, I forgot to have the book open.
That's twice, Nick.
I know. I'm terrible this evening. Man, there we go. Saving throws. All right, save versus spell.
Love first level of magic user spells.
Yeah. All right. It missed its save. I'll be doggone. Well, you know, I went by the hit dice and, I missed it by
let's
two.
Let's rush it. Let's rush it.
So basically it looks like it went to sleep.
As soon as you cast, it was while you were casting and you heard the thing speaking, help me, someone please help.
Let's go get it.
Let's go get it.
You go down to it. And you get a, and that's going to last quite some time right now, isn't it? About what, six turns, I think it is, or six rounds?
I'd have to look it up, but I can pretty much assume that it's going to last for the duration.
It's like 6 minutes or something like
encounter.
That. Yeah.
Yes.
Enough time for us to get there and look around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you only see the one. It's rather big creature. It's a large creature, absolutely. And it's got the tail of a lion. It's got hooves like a deer and a body similar to a deer. It's got a head like a, almost like a dog, almost like a, maybe like a Rottweiler.
Mm-hmm.
Rather longish neck. Do any of you guys know what it is?
No.
It sounds so familiar, and I know I'm going to just groan when you tell me, but I don't know what we've just put to sleep. What have we got?
It's the Lucrata.
What?
I don't know.
Now I don't know. I do not know. You guys,
where's that?
Time to look this up.
Lucrata. It's right out of the Monster Manual. On
number
page
one?
60. Yeah.
Plain old number one, huh?
Yeah.
Page 60. There it is. I've never, ever encountered one of these before.
These are nasty, nasty creatures. I like them. They're, like I said, they're kind of an amalgam of like different regular creatures put together, lion's tail, the body like a deer.
A detect evil would let us know that this was an evil creature. So if we were in game right now, this would be time to go ahead and put it out of its misery while it's asleep.
Yeah, basically.
So I'm going to read out of here because this is really fascinating to me. This weird creature haunts deserted and desolate places, for it is so ugly most other creatures cannot bear the sight of it. The body of a Lucrata resembles that of a stag, its tail being rather lion-like, and its legs and in cloven hooves. Its head is that of a huge badger.
Yeah.
This is like a Monty Python monster. But instead of teeth, it has sharp, jagged, bony ridges. This monster is very sly and can imitate the voice of a man or woman. They will do this to trick prey to approach within attack distance. When retreating, the Lucrata can kick backwards with both hooves, like a llama, causing 1 to 6 hit points of damage with each that hits. Ouch. The monster speaks the language of its alignment as well as the common tongue.
Yeah, and its normal attack, it'll bite you for 3 to 18 points of damage. So, nasty creature. On top of
and it's actually intelligent.
Oh yeah, it's average intelligence and chaotic evil.
Yeah.
For further reading on this creature, there is an ecology of this that was in Dragon Magazine, issue 91. That would have been November of 1984. Mm-hmm. So it was Dragon Magazine, issue 91. Great write up by Ed Greenwood on this creature, where he again gives another name. He calls it the Ugly Killer. And the Ugly Killer, as they call it, where he used it is that it'll team up with other evil creatures, maybe like Nagas or Lamias. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll team up with maybe demons or devils if they're in their area. And then even said that the demon lord Kachichi, wherever that demon lord is, says reported that the demon was accompanied by two astoundingly large Lucrata of exceptionally vicious temperaments who apparently serve him as bodyguards. So it gives a little bit on the how, you know, when male and female Lucratas, calves are born 6 months after mating. The calves will generally stay for about 8 months or until the female is about to give birth again. A real good article here about a little more about this creature as far as like additional attacks it could do besides what is given in the monster manual. So really good write-up on it if people can looked it up in their archives. Or if you're lucky enough to have the Dragon Magazine thing on the CD, it's definitely worth looking into. So yeah, the Lucrata, it's a very cool creature. And
go ahead.
Well, the one thing I did is when I had you guys roll, for about its voice, one little the appendix to it in the article, what I was using is all through grown Lucrata can mimic the human voice with the same degree of skill. Any character with an earshot who can understand the common tongue will believe that the voice is that of a human if the character fails to roll less than half their intelligence or wisdom, whichever is higher, on a d20.
You're getting that from the ecology?
Yes.
Okay, that's good, because it kind of leads to something that I've been thinking about lately. And that's when you said roll the d20 for this, it set that off in my mind. I'm not going to say I cringed on it or anything, but the whole thing of ability checks and that kind of thing. Do you guys know much about the history of when these started showing up in
ability checks?
Because it's one of those things that I know is sort of at the core of the D20 system.
Yeah.
But it's always bothered me because it doesn't have the same level of there's no rationale behind it in terms of percentage chance of something happening. It's just a very convenient way to roll things. And I'll admit that I resort to that a lot when I don't have time to try to look up exactly how to roll something. Sometimes I'll just go with it. You know what? What's your dexterity? Roll me your dexterity. Tell me what you got. but I don't like it.
That's that whole thing came about with
where
the whole,
it all started.
Yeah,
oh my gosh,
third edition is where it all started with.
I'm not sure about that.
I'm almost positive.
I think it goes further back.
It started with the third edition called the Lazy Man System, where you don't instead of describing things and plotting things out, it's just give me a roll on your stat.
Yeah.
That was always a third edition thing, as far as I remember.
Well, it'd be a good thing to maybe we'll look at it in a future issue. You know, talking about how to handle some of the myriad instances that come up that don't actually have a rule that goes around them. If you wanted to be a bit more accurate in the way that you choose to roll things, I'd have to prepare for that. I know I don't have an answer for it, but it might be a good thing to do, because if I find out the answer for it, maybe it'll make my games run a little bit better.
Yeah, that'll be definitely something to look into.
So, yes, the Lucrata is...
Lucrata.
Lucrata, and look for number 91 for the Ecology of, and that CD is actually, it shows up on eBay pretty regularly. I don't know if it's still on sale. Is it? Can you still buy it?
Which one?
New?
I don't know.
The DM, the Dungeon Guide CD? I mean...
All the Dragon magazines on CD.
Every once in a while it's on eBay.
Well, it's a great thing. Anybody can pick it up. It's the best.
It's you can buy it off Amazon, but it's like $200.
Yikes. Yeah, look on eBay. Or, go to Gen Con and check the auction.
Well, there you go.
Normally what I would have done, instead of, like Nick does, is like he did the stat thing, I would have done the whole Gygaxian and roll me a D6 and tell me what you get and base it off of that. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going by the article. I thought that was a kind of a... It was a good way to go with that. So
no, I was comfortable with that. I mean, that made some sense. So,
all right. Well, that's been a nice short creature feature this week. So everyone should be happy. And we're gonna head into the final segment of the week.
Ooh, one of those electronic voting dealies.
All right, guys. I guess that's gonna put a wrap on the show.
Oh, poopy.
Aww. So, poll of the week. Who has the stats for that? We had a question up. This is the question.
Mr. Cotta.
Jason, go ahead.
So last week we talked about the animal friendship ring.
Yes.
And there was an open question as to which monsters would actually be affected by animal friendship.
Okay.
The list, which Nick is going to have up in time for this podcast's release,
yes, I will,
is a list of all of the quote-unquote real animals that are in the three monster books, Monster Manual 1 and 2, and the Fiend Folio.
Right. Should I put that under featured articles?
Sure. I don't know. I click all the boxes for everything.
Jason.
So... no, I don't. So we put up a poll, and we said, which creatures do you think should be affected by animal friendship? And there were three choices. The first one is what I actually play, which is all creatures with animal intelligence and neutral alignment, and that would include the stun jelly. The second choice was just quote-unquote real animals, but things like fire lizards are okay. So Nick, I don't know if you're going to have fire lizards on your list or not, but that would be the second answer. And the third option is only creatures that are real animals that have actually existed on Earth, real world. So that would mean no Lucrata anyways, because they're not...
if you could find one, let me know.
Well, also they're not animal intelligence or neutral.
Yeah.
But...
like a basilisk.
Mm. Yeah, but the leopard, for example, would count, whereas the fire lizard wouldn't. So right. With this poll, the last place... with just 10% of the vote, was only creatures that are real animals which have existed on Earth. So I think most people want to at least leave some room for the fire lizard. And with 35% of the vote, in second place is... ready for it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Nick's answer. Just real animals, but things like fire lizards...
You better update that, because I just voted on that.
Too late. Voting is closed. And with 55% of the vote, even with the vote you just cast, you wouldn't be able to push it over the edge. 55% of the vote, it says Jason is right, and it is all
creatures.
It doesn't say Jason is right.
55% of the people who voted felt that I was the wisest of all. And as long as they have animal intelligence and neutral alignment, go ahead and make friends with that stun jelly.
Right.
You just wanted to have your silly little stun jelly, didn't you?
I really do.
It is a cool monster. Don't get me wrong, but
yeah, it's a good one.
No, you want to talk about conspiracies. There's a conspiracy here.
Hey, I may run the website, but I don't affect the polls, except for that one time a few weeks ago when I somehow voted twice, but I don't know how that happened. But not this time.
Yeah, not this time.
Polls will begin at 9 o'clock.
Yeah. This time you voted four times. Oh, no, I'm kidding. As of this podcast being published, the poll will still be open for anyone who still wants to vote to prove Jason wrong.
There you go.
And I'll get those. And I'll get that up tonight with the list.
Excellent.
Hello, future people. Okay, so I think that's about it. D20 Radio.
So two more shows before Gen Con.
Woo!
Oh.
Yes.
All right. Now,
obviously, the week of Gen Con, we will not be doing a show except for whatever outtakes we have from Gen Con.
Oh, I thought we were going to do a show from Gen Con.
Sure. Where are we going to do it from?
I don't know. Something. So the week of Gen Con, there either will or will not be a show.
Yeah.
It will either not exist at all, or it'll be something more amazing than ever.
Well, I guess we can go down Podcast Alley and see if we can steal some equipment.
We'll see what we can do. I'll try to bring... we can talk separately about it, but I'll try to bring whatever I can. Separately. You know, if there's some stuff you think we need to bring and run it out of the hotel or something.
Quick, what level of thief do you think you are?
12.
Okay, then.
You said quick. That's going to end it up tonight. RFIstaffgmail.com, RFIpodcast.com, dragonsfoot.org/forums, D20 Radio, our gracious host with Order 66 podcast, and various podcasts out there. Now they now have a podcast about Pathfinder. So if you like Pathfinder, you can head over there and listen to Chronicles of something or other. It's like, I'm sorry about that.
Chronicles of something or another.
Sorry about that, guys. I can't think of the name. I think it was Chronicles of some... I don't remember.
Actually, that would be a really cool name of something. Chronicles of something or another.
Yeah, something or another. No One Sold, guys. Great podcast. Good sound. Jason, you probably really like the audio quality of the podcast. Check it out.
I will check it out. It's a Chronicles of something or other.
Yeah, that's the official word. Keep it original, keep it old school, and something or other.
Bye, everybody.
Roll for initiative.